The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
This is the Todd Starnes Show, coast to coast on more than 100 outstanding radio stations and streaming live at toddstarnes.com. Hello, I'm Jeff Stein from Starnes Media Affiliate, News Talk 1540 KXEL in Iowa, and it's my pleasure to be sitting behind the mic today to take you through the rest of this Wednesday edition of the Starnes program. Todd is on his way back from Liberty University. You heard the excellent broadcast from there yesterday. So as he is en route, it gives us a chance to connect again at 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. That is the same number you're used to using. You can also connect with the show online. It's toddstarnes.com. And you can also check out the podcast that I do at totallyiowa.com. Three separate segments every single day. And you can find those and subscribe, if you like, at your favorite podcast vendor at totallyiowa.com. So I got up this morning, and the first news alert I saw indicated that Pfizer says their vaccine will work on this new Omicron variant. Well, sort of. So far, if you have gotten the two-shot protocol of Pfizer, they say it's not tremendously effective on Omicron. They say that obviously their vaccine is better than not having a vaccine, and so they're four-step in line with the Biden administration. Everybody ought to get a jab. The more jabs, the better. But here's the part that is just tremendously interesting to me. We know that people have had the two-shot Pfizer protocol and have gotten Omicron. But they say if you get the booster, then, oh yes, then it's very effective against it. Now, pardon my cynicism, and those of you in Starnes Nation who have heard me talk on this program before are saying, oh yeah, yeah, this guy's not at all cynical. Well, I'm sorry, government has made me that way. Is it not true, friends, that the more shots Pfizer sells to the government to put into our bodies, the more money they make? Let's face it. The vaccine was developed in record time thanks to, that's right, Donald Trump and Operation Warp Speed. You wouldn't know that today. You wouldn't know that because President number 45 pushed all the resources of the government behind this effort. That's why we have this today. And keep in mind, Donald Trump last year said we could have a vaccine by the fall. Could be October, could be November. And he was laughed at. People said he was crazy. People said that he absolutely was just lying in order to get reelected. And what do you know? The vaccines were announced by these companies right after Election Day. He was right all along. He had the inside information. They deliberately withheld announcement until after Election Day. Don't want to influence the election, you know. So these are the people we're dealing with. These are the people who now say we need a booster shot anyway. And when a lot of citizens are saying, I just don't think I want a booster shot, they come out today to say, oh no, our vaccine is wonderful with regard to this new variant, but you need the third one. The other two, it's not so, oh, but the third one. What's the difference? Have they changed the booster? No. They're simply saying more is better. And again, if they get this to where you think of it as a flu shot, which, by the way, I don't get, or the shingle shot, which, by the way, I don't get, but they're trying to get this to be an annual event. Set your clocks back an hour, change the battery in your smoke detector, get a whole bunch of shots. Now, I'm not against vaccines at all. Not at all. I'm against the one-size-fits-all medical advice that is being pushed by this administration. So now you've got Pfizer, with a financial interest in the whole thing, saying you need the booster to fight this new variant, even though the two-shot protocol has not been tremendously effective on it. Once again, this is a very real virus. This is deadly. But like all medical situations, one size does not fit all for treatment. If you went to the doctor and they said you need an operation, often what you say is, I'd kind of like a second opinion on that. And we say that that's smart, because that's how you should proceed. Get a second opinion. Nothing wrong with that. But question this vaccine? Question the fact that companies with a financial interest are the ones saying how wonderful the vaccine is? You question that, and they take away your ability to speak. If you're a doctor, you get hauled in. If you're not espousing the party line, if you have a social media account, if you have a microphone, no, you can't say that. That is against the narrative. So again, I'm not against a vaccine. I'm against stupid, blind following of a government or a corporation that have agendas that are not solely in your best interest. Who acts in your best interest? You. This is a medical decision. You make it with your doctor on real data. You make the decision not based on financial gain for a company or power grab by a government. Go ahead, get the shot if you want to, but not because a company whose pockets could be lined say so. Check it out on your own. Love to hear what you think at 844-747-8868. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd, and this is the Todd Starn Show.
Christmas is just around the corner, and if you are in one of the big box stores, you're not going to find MyPillow, and there's a reason why. They've been kicked out of many big box stores because of the cancel culture mob, and that's why Mike Lindell wants to sell directly to you, and that comes with some great savings. You're going to be able to get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard pillow, normally $69.98, now only $19.98 with the promo code STARNS. And MyPillow does more than just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to slippers, even doggy beds and human beds. Go to MyPillow.com/Starnes. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes. And use the promo code Starnes or call 800-544-8939. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes or call 1-800-544-8939. Also, use the promo code STARNS. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Now, you see, this is what happens when you have a control room in Memphis, Tennessee. That's your rejoin music right there. That is some good stuff. Welcome back. Todd Starnes radio program on the air for this Wednesday. I'm Jeff Stein filling in for Todd, who's making his way back from the Liberty University Starnes Studios from the show yesterday. Love to have the conversation with you at 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. In the last segment, I told you I was a little suspicious about the fact that Pfizer says, get a booster, it'll take care of Omicron, even though they make more money the more shots that are administered. And the fact that the vaccine so far hasn't really been effective with regard to this variant. One of the things that I found really interesting, and I saw it on Twitter, so it has to be true, right? You can follow Todd on Twitter. That's truth, at Todd Starnes. You can follow me on Twitter. I like to think it's truthful, at Iowa Politics. But I saw someone point out, if you went into your doctor's office and you said, I want a COVID test, do they tell you what variant you have? Or do they just say, well, you have COVID? So in other words, how do we know? When you just go to your regular doctor's office, I'm sure there's a good answer. I'm sure they have a way to determine that this is a little different than something else. But the problem we have, friends, is I grew up in the primarily the 1970s. All right. I graduated from high school in 81. You do the well, I'm 58 years old. I'm not going to hide it. I can't hide it. I'm 58 years old, and it's not a fun place to be. You young people, you'll get yours. Well, in any event, you believed in government. Well, then came Vietnam, then came Watergate, and now we cannot trust our government with regard to public health issues. And that's a bad place to be. We need to be able to have the confidence that what we hear from our elected officials, the people we put there, we need to be able to trust that. And I don't know how you get that back, because there is too much of a swamp on both sides. They don't want their cushy little existence interrupted. They like things the way they are, because they're the ones personally benefiting, either with power or money or both. And when you get a transformative figure like a Donald Trump who comes in, you see what happens. Because the number one priority of any politician is to get elected. The number two priority is to get reelected. And from before they even take office, they're focusing on number two, how to get reelected. It is in their interest for the system that they have created to keep rolling along. And they don't want you getting in the way. They don't want you or somebody you send there getting in the way. So as people have said, as the former president has said, those who are fighting to keep him down, they're really fighting to keep you down. Are there honorable people serving in government? Absolutely. Absolutely. But the institution is skewed against real change. Here's a very simple example of it. At some point here in the next several months, we're going to be filing our income taxes again. Really? You brought that up? We haven't even bought the Christmas present for Aunt Tilly. Yes, I know. But at some point, you're going to file your income taxes. And on your federal income tax form, you have the ability to designate that a portion, I think it's $1.50, a portion of what you pay in taxes go to the political campaigns, to the political campaign fund, designate it to whatever party. You'll notice it says Republican and Democrat. It doesn't say Libertarian. It doesn't say Independent. It doesn't say Conservative Party for those in New York State. It doesn't say any of that. They have set it up so that their two-party system that evolved to get to be a two-party system, that power is centralized and perpetuated. There are many other states, not just the federal government, but in states where an independent candidate or a third-party candidate, it is really difficult to get on the ballot. If you're a Republican, there's a process. Win the primary, be designated, whatever. If you're a Democrat, same thing. There are some states, and I love the election laws in my state of Iowa. Angers a lot of people. We make it tough to cheat. We have paper ballots, all of this. We have good rules about such things. We run them fair. We're not the only state, but I like where I'm at. However, even with that, the one thing Republicans and Democrats could agree on a few years ago with election reform was to say, if you ran in a primary and lost, it's too late for you to get on the ballot for the general election by petition or other party. In other words, the primaries for Republicans and Democrats are held in June, which is, what, 3 months before the election. That seems okay. But if you're going to try to get on the ballot by petition, you have to have declared those intentions before then. So you remember some years ago, Joe Lieberman was the U.S. Senator from Connecticut. As a Democrat, he lost in the primary because he wasn't far enough left for those who vote in primaries. He turned around, became an independent, got on the ballot, and won re-election as an independent. I live in a state where you can't do that now. It's not permissible because the deadline for declaring that independent candidacy by petition, it's before the partisan primary. And the partisans did that on purpose to make sure that nobody got in the way, that the two-party system is perpetuated. So when these folks are talking about reform, again, pardon my skepticism. Reform will only go so far. And that's why every time we talk about a true third-party effort, the system is now, in my view, rigged in favor of Republicans and Democrats, rigged by them. And so it's going to be virtually impossible for any third movement to rise up. And then when you have a figure like Donald Trump win the nomination, in essence, taking over the Republican Party, all of those folks who were used to being in charge don't like it. That's why we've had the problems we have had. That does not mean stop. It does not mean quit fighting. It does not mean fervently stick to your beliefs. But if you're going to win the game, you have to know what the rules of the game are. And the rules are set up not to favor citizens and free choice, not to favor parties other than Republicans and Democrats. It is set up so that those who have power can keep power. If you had a caucus of people who were pro-Trump or anti-Trump during the 4 years he was in office, forget party affiliation, there were a lot of folks with R by their name who were against President Trump because he was playing the game and they weren't winning anymore. Publicly, they'd take his endorsement. Publicly, they'd take his money that he could raise for them. But privately, he was getting in the way of their good deal. And there's a certain level of elected official who thinks you as the voters are the dumb ones. They know far more than you do. That's why they tell you something when they're home and then go to Washington and do something entirely different. Term limits, by the way, is a tremendous example of that. How many elected officials, how many members of Congress, how many senators have said to you, in your home area. Of course, I'm in favor of term limits. We got to drain the swamp. We got to start somewhere. And then when they go back to Washington, they say quietly to their leadership, you can't put a term limits bill on the floor because I don't want to go on record because I really like being here and I like being invited to these parties, but I got to tell my voters that I'm in favor of term limits. I got to tell my voters that I'm in favor of limiting my own job. Oh, we don't want that. That's why you don't see it. Americans want term limits, but it's never going to be put on the floor. And many times it's the very representative that told you to your face they were in favor of term limits who quietly said, don't make me go on record on that one. I know this because more than one member of Congress has told me that they've been in the room when it's happened. Again, we need to be of good health and good humor and good spirit on all this. But we need to be knowledgeable. We need to be knowledgeable because we have to verify what our government says. Whether it is on budgets, whether it is on health care, whether it is on, sadly, national defense. It's okay to challenge and ask questions. We deserve answers, honest answers. And if we don't like the answer, we can then take action, but we have to have the information. It is the hallmark of self-governance. And so it's okay to be skeptical. That doesn't mean you're un-American. It doesn't mean you're anti-vax. It doesn't mean you hate children or whatever it is. It means you're acting in a representative democracy the way the founders had intended. And that is vitally important if we are going to continue and be the greatest nation, as I say, that God ever blessed. I'd like to hear your thoughts on whatever's on your mind, whether it's something we've talked about today or something else. Call us now, won't you? 844-747-8868. Plenty of time for our conversations to continue by phone with you after this break. It's 844-747-8868. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. And thanks for being along. You're listening to The Todd Starnes Show.
Triggering microaggressions from coast to coast. It's Todd Starnes.
Studios, this is the Todd Starnes Show. Hello, I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today. Thanks so much for being along. I've got a lot of stuff that I'm doing right now. I'm finishing up another book. Okay, I'm way behind on the deadline. Don't tell anybody. Well, actually, they all know. So I'm working on this book. I've got some additional radio things that I'm doing. And so I'm not getting as much sleep, frankly, as I should or that I would like. But even though I have all this stuff bouncing around in my head, I go to sleep immediately. And I wake up, even with not as much sleep as I would like, I wake up refreshed. And the reason is my pillow. Got this at home some years ago. I used to whine and moan and complain that I just didn't feel good. I couldn't get comfortable. And you know how this goes. You buy a different pillow. You put two pillows. You go without a pillow. Yeah, all of that stuff. And then we got MyPillow, and I thought, these are radio people talking about this. You can't trust them. Ah, but you can, because MyPillow is amazing. And now you know that MyPillow does not have box stores or shopping channels now. Thank you, cancel culture. But the good thing is, and this is what's amazing, when it's in one of these box stores, well, those people want a cut out of it, right? And that jacks the price up. So if now Mike Lindell doesn't have to worry about stocking MyPillow in some of these stores, he's saving money and passing the savings on directly to you. lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard MyPillow. It's regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with the promo code STARNS, Todd's last name. They also have queen size. Those usually go for $79.98, well worth it. Imagine how good you're going to feel when you pay $24.98 with the promo code. King size used to be $89.98, now it's $29.98 with the promo code STARNS. And you know, MyPillow is not just pillows. They have more than 150 products, sleepwear, new beds, the slippers, the sheets, and of course the pillows. Now that promo code STARNS also works on mystore.com and frankspeech.com. So go online, mypillow.com, use the promo code STARNS, cheapest prices you've found ever for one of the tremendous products you're ever going to find and one of the great success stories. That's mypillow.com, and the promo code is STARNS. Coming up in the other hours of this program, this is a three-hour radio program that you can hear live all across the country and also at toddstarns.com. In our second hour, which is coming up in just a few moments, former Wisconsin governor, my neighbor up here to the northeast, Scott Walker. He is now president of the YAF, the Young Americas Foundation. He'll be joining us just after the top of the hour. We'll also speak with Josh Mandel coming up at the bottom of the next hour. The assertion there is that the Democrats are driving up energy prices on purpose, and it's not to help you. So we'll talk about energy prices next hour as well. In our third hour of the program, a return guest and someone I'm always pleased to speak with, she is news analyst and attorney Dr. Wendy Patrick, and we're going to talk about the COVID situation from a legal standpoint, not only these vaccine mandates, which, by the way, I think the Biden administration is batting 1,000 in losing in court every time one of these things comes up. Another big one again yesterday. I trust they'll not be deterred. Oh, and I told you on this program a while ago that fake IDs for college kids to get into bars, that's passé. Fake vax cards, that's where the money is. Well, maybe jail time too, because that's altering a government document. But there are some NFL players who are trying to pull that. We'll talk with her about that as well. And someone else I've had the great privilege of speaking with us on this program is Sarah Westwood, excellent reporter for the Washington Examiner. She will join us coming up in hour number three of this program as well. And I hope you will join as well. It's 844-747-8868. Might as well call, get queued up. Grace will take the call, put it in the computer, and we'll get to you just as soon as we can in the next hour. Todd is on his way back. He'll be with you again soon. I'm here in the meantime. Jeff Stein, thanks for being along. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever you're listening across this, the greatest nation God ever blessed, welcome to this second hour of a Wednesday edition of the Todd Starnes radio program, coast to coast on more than 100 outstanding radio stations, and as always, streaming live at toddstarnes.com. Hello, fellow patriots. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today. You heard him from the Liberty University studios yesterday, and he's on his way back today to Memphis and will be with you again soon. My privilege, as always, to be behind the microphone. I'm coming to you from my home base, News Talk 1540 KXEL in Waterloo and Cedar Rapids, Iowa, with a 50,000-watt blowtorch scorching middle America with accurate news and reasonable views. And today, the Liberty University studios for the Todd Starnes Show, partly in Memphis, partly right here in Iowa. Give us a call if you would. We'll continue this coast-to-coast conversation at 844-747-8868. I'll say that again, 844-747-8868. 8868. But we begin this hour of the program by going directly to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line, where we have the privilege of speaking with the former governor of the state of Wisconsin. He's now president of Young America's Foundation, Governor Scott Walker. Governor Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. How are you today?
Hey, Jeff, great to be with you. And I love your home base. I lived until I was in third grade in Plainfield, Iowa, which is just north of where you broadcast from, just north of Waverly.
Well, I live near Denver and Janesville, so you know how to get to my house, probably.
I do indeed. Nothing like good chat with Midwesterners, right?
Well, you know, I was going to say I could look out my window and see Wisconsin from here. It's almost that close. So, you know, I was feeling left out personally, Governor, earlier this year because I had never had a video pulled from YouTube, and then all of a sudden I got to sit at the cool kids' table because they didn't like something I said. And now you folks at YAF, you've got a similar censorship situation. Pretty serious.
It is, and the amazing part about it is, you know, I get, okay, sometimes it's certain words, certain phrases. We've been pretty succinct about saying what we want to say, but in ways that keep us from getting censored here. But we just had yet another one of our great conferences out at the Reagan Ranch, the home of the president and first lady during their 8 years of as a president and first lady of the United States, Ronald and Nancy Reagan. But we now have conferences out there at the Reagan Ranch Center. We take them up to the Reagan Ranch. Just a week ago, we had another seminar on escaping communism, and one of our presenters, George Harbison, gave a very specific, explicit presentation on the victims of socialism, the victims of communism, and it's historically accurate. It's exactly what happened, and yet they put this big censor on so that you can't watch it if you're under 18. There's all sorts of warnings on it. Yeah, it's the truth. It's the reality, and it's just another example of how the Marxist and big tech don't want the average citizen, particularly young people, to actually hear the truth, and all the more reason why at the YF.org we're going to continue to fight for it.
Well, they don't want you interrupting with their narrative as they try to mold little Marxists in K-12 education.
Well, that's exactly right. We saw Saul Alinsky start in the 60s and really march through and take over institutions of higher education. We've now seen, with the help of the radical union bosses and the teachers union, the takeover of the government-run schools, and sadly even some of the private and occasionally even some of the so-called religious schools. We've seen it all throughout our culture. We're seeing it not just in big labor and big government, but increasingly in big corporations and now big tech. I'm amazed that there's any kids left out there that aren't completely a full-blown socialist. But thankfully, they've got good parents, good influences, good grandparents. And we know the reason why they push this cancel culture is because our ideas are better. They actually work. And we show them the facts of communism. We show them the failures of socialism. We compare that to market-based capitalism and freedom in places like the United States and how much better it's worked than the rest of the world. They can see for themselves the facts, and they trend our way. The left knows the only way they can win is if they block us from getting the truth out.
Governor Scott Walker of Young America's Foundation joining us on the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. YAF.org is the website, and on the Twitter machine, it's at YAF. Obviously, the folks at YouTube, Governor, know that they have no grounds for this, or they would have just pulled it all together. They've got this, it may not be suitable for those under 18. Now, we haven't put a strike on your channel, and the content is still live. They know they can't pull it because it's truthful, but they've done everything they can to hide it, haven't they?
Well, that's exactly it. And we've seen this trend. You see this trend from the left. One of our very well-known campus speakers, Ben Shapiro, for example, in the past, we had him at, of all places, the home of the hallmark of free speech, the University of California, Berkeley, the place that, you know, many generations ago, they were pushing for free speech. Ironically, some of the same protesters back then are some of the same administrators there and elsewhere around the country blocking it. But they didn't block it outright. What they did was they said, okay, you're going to bring Shapiro in. It can't be after 3 in the afternoon. You can't advertise for it. And, oh, by the way, we're going to charge you for security at multiple times larger than they did for any other group out there on the left. we fought that. We prevailed. They ultimately had to settle and pay part of the legal fees and change their policy. And so it's simple. If we can win at Berkeley, we can win anywhere. But we shouldn't have to have these fights. Free speech is guaranteed in our Constitution. It should be revered on our college campuses. When we talk about YouTube, and Facebook, and Twitter, if this is truly a platform, free speech should be available for everyone, not just those that the woke left thinks are appropriate.
And even when you try to compete with other outlets, those can be, you know, the plug is pulled on those. We know what happened to Parler earlier, and the danger of big tech is what we saw earlier this week, where the Amazon Web Services, whether they had a hiccup or somebody attacked it, but all of a sudden, everybody's got a problem because we've put all this concentrated power, the infrastructure, the backbone, in the hands of too few. Is there any good way to be able to have the free and independent voice without the fear of these kinds of technological interferences?
Well, I think one of the first things that when there's new majorities come post the November 2022 elections in the House and the Senate and future leaders in Washington, well, anywhere, but particularly in Washington, the Section 230 exemptions, I think, are the issue that have been threatened before. There needs to be action. If you're going to be a platform, then act like a platform. If you're going to be a publisher, then you don't, you know, you're going to be a publisher, but you don't get the same liability exemptions if you're actually publishing, if you're censoring, if you're dictating what can or can't be on your platform out there. And that's, I think, the fault of all this. I don't like the government. I certainly don't want the federal government in the business of regulating private businesses. But to me, the default way to deal with that is to say, well, if you're going to be a true publisher and not a platform, then you shouldn't have the same liability exemptions that platforms do. There's been a lot of threats made on that. They probably need to do something about that in order to level the playing field here.
Well, you have to have it be consistent, because I remember from my law school days reading about the phone company. They didn't want to be responsible. They just wanted to be a common carrier. They didn't want to be responsible for what Scott Walker said to Jeff Stein on the phone. Same thing with things like AOL. But now these big companies are saying, we want to be able to censor when it fits our mood and our narrative, but you can't have it both ways. And they know right now their friends in Congress are not going to do anything to adversely impact their business model.
Well, you're exactly right. And that's the pushback. I mean, we now know why they did that. You look at the stories about Hunter Biden, that not some weird online service, but the New York Post, one of the oldest newspapers in America, had, and they, big tech, stopped that from getting out. We know that would have had an impact on the 2020 elections. We hear story after story after story of where big tech selectively picks and chooses, and it's all the more reason, again, why we need to level the playing field. And one of the best ways to do it is deal with the Section 230 liabilities. But as an optimist, I'll tell you, as down and out as these things make you feel, the censoring, the pushback, the free speech violations on campus, what it tells me is they can't win on the merits. And so if we just continue to be vigilant, we know that our ideas succeed. We're making inroads. We can change things. One of the campuses I spoke at last year before COVID, when I wasn't the president, I was just a speaker for Young America's Foundation, was at Stanford. And of the three students who helped organize it, I asked the three of them how they became conservatives. Two of the three were what you'd expect, traditional, but one was a gentleman who told me his parents were both Democrats. I asked him, how did you become a conservative? He said he just happened to be in the car and turned on talk radio, listened to it, got to campus, got involved with College Republicans, got involved with YF, and brought me to campus. That story in itself is amazing. It's even more amazing when you realize John's mother is Susan Rice. And so if Susan, yes, Rice's son can become a conservative, anybody can, all the more reason why they're fighting to stop people like John from hearing the truth.
Best thing for you about being president of YAF is what?
Oh, the students. I mean, anytime I'm down and out, you go to campus and you see what they're up against. You see the odds. You see the fact that so many of them are so brave and they're not willing to back down. It just makes me want to go out and work that much harder.
So when we want to find this video that YouTube is trying to hide, what's the best way for us to make connection with it and see what it is that they're so scared of?
YAF.org, YAF.org. You can connect to all that. Our YouTube channel itself is YAFTV, and we've actually got over 600,000 subscribers. And so as it does on campus when they try to protest and block us, oftentimes not only do more of our people and the left show up, but more curious students show up. I believe in this case, if we get the word out, it'll backfire as well, because more curious Americans will want to tune in and watch that video and find out why are they so worked up, why are they trying to block it. And the more we do that, the more the truth gets out. Shine a little light, and it's amazing what the light will reveal.
Those people see it and say, what are they trying to, this just makes sense. Why are they trying to keep us from the truth? Governor,
exactly. It's just the facts. It's just history.
Well, heaven knows, facts don't work in their favor, so they have to try to block them. Governor, it was a great privilege to speak with you, sir. Continue the excellent work with YAF. Thanks for joining the Starn Show today.
My pleasure. God bless, and have a great Christmas.
You as well, sir. YAF.org is the website for Young America's Foundation. That's YAF.org. Former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, president now of YAF, and he joined us on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. What do you think about that? What do you think about anything that's going on today? I'm glad he's optimistic. For some reason, I feel like I'm not in an optimistic mood. I don't know. I'm usually very, very upbeat. I still am. I'm just, I think, realistic. But let's get what's on your mind, would you? Give us a call, please. 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. Thanks for being along on this Wednesday edition of the Todd Starnes Show.
You're listening to Todd Starnes.
Show coming to you today from the Liberty University studios, not only at the mighty 990 KWAM in Memphis, the home base, but also from where I am at KXEL in Waterloo and Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today on the program. 844-747-8868 is the number that you can use to continue this national conversation. 844-747-8868. Are the Democrats trying to increase energy prices? And if so, what's the end game? Now, I found today, as I was driving into work, gas had actually dropped for the first time where I'm at, about a dime a gallon, now under $3 a gallon. Now, that's still a huge, huge increase over last year at this time, but it did start to go down a little bit. Well, are they doing this on purpose, and what's the end game? We have a guest who knows something about the topic, and he'll be joining us after the bottom of the hour break. Coming up in our next hour, by the way, we will talk about the Biden administration's vaccine policies and their aftermath. And by the way, as I said earlier, the administration is batting 1,000. They've lost every single court case so far that has come up on these. We'll talk with news analyst and attorney Dr. Wendy Patrick next hour, and we will also speak with Sarah Westwood of the Washington Examiner about these high-profile Democrats who just keep coming back. The voters say no, and yet they keep thinking they're right, and they keep running for things. And I suppose if you're a Republican and these failed Democrats keep coming back, you say, well, that's fine. Didn't work before. It's got to be an end game there, and we'll talk with Sarah Westwood about it about an hour from now. 844-747-8868 is how you can reach us. And as always, go to toddstarnes.com. On the Twitter machine, it's at toddstarnes. You can find me at totallyiowa.com, and I'm on Twitter and Getter and Parler at Iowa Politics. So when you see what is going on in Washington today, where the Democrats can't get themselves organized, And the Republicans seem to be helping them out. It's sort of like you're in a fight and you got the other guy pinned down and you could finish him or her off and then you let him up. It feels like that's what's happening and continues to be happening. I don't know if you feel the same way, but it seems like there's a lot of strong talk, and then when push comes to shove, oh, no, 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 we'll let you up. We'll give you another couple of months. Oh, you need a couple of more months? Yeah, we'll do that too. What I just cannot for the life of me understand is how a government cannot have a budget in place before a fiscal year. Your business has to have its budget in place, because if you're dealing with shareholders, if you're dealing with bankers who hold your financing, you've got to have your budget for the year in place when they ask for it. You can't just simply say, well, I don't need to be accountable to you, and so I'm just going to spend whatever I want to spend, and then we'll come back on this later. If Todd Starnes went to his bank and said, here's my plan for Starnes Media Group for the next year, the bank's going to say, well, you know, do this, do that, do something else, and he better do it. He can't just simply say, well, how about we do a continuing resolution for a few months, and then we'll do another one for a few more months. No, you're running a business. You have to be accountable. Congress doesn't feel accountable to you. And after all, didn't you send them there? Aren't they our representatives? Well, just kick the can down the road. That's fine. What's the game? I understand shutting down the government costs money. I also understand that at some point a line in the sand is a line in the sand, not something that can just be washed away. 844-747-8868. Your thoughts welcome, please. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. This is the Todd Starnes Show. University Studios. This is the Todd Starnes Show. Hello, I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd on this Wednesday. 844-747-8868 is the number to call to join the conversation. It's 844-747-8868. I wound up going to the grocery store yesterday because I like to eat. That's really what it comes down to. And again, I'm just absolutely struck by the fact that it's a dollar a pound more for whether it's pork or chicken or beef. And I'm out here in the Midwest in Iowa, and I know darn well the producers are not getting that money, right? I mean, I'm paying more. So let's say I just get a roast, all right, a nice beef roast. Not fancy, just regular old beef roast. I usually get a 2 or a 3 pound roast, so you've got plenty of leftovers, good sandwiches for the rest of the week, right? Well, let's say it goes up a dollar a pound. It's already been up more than that, but right now it's about a dollar a pound more than I was paying a year ago. Here's a 2-3 pound roast. I've just now upped my bill by $2 or $3. And you multiply that by the second one I might get or the other. I mean, the costs are just out of this world. And I live in the country, so I've got to get home heating fuel, get the tank filled. I commute to work. I go to the gas station. The energy prices are through the roof. And our next guest on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line thinks he knows why this is happening. He's Josh Mandel. He's leading in the fight for the U.S. Senate in the state of Ohio. Mr. Mandel, Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. How are you today?
Hey, Jeff. I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. All right, so there are some nefarious things going on here, right? I mean, the Democrats have an agenda here with these high energy prices, right?
Mm-hmm, they do. It is an agenda grounded in corruption and personal enrichment and cronyism. Their agenda is to take our tax money. You know, I'm here in Ohio. I'm running for the U.S. Senate in Ohio. Mm-hmm. The tax money of hardworking citizens in places like Cleveland and Toledo and Dayton and Cincinnati, and transfer the tax money to multimillionaires and multibillionaires who are running green energy boondoggle companies in California. But in order to do that, they have to allocate a lot of these funds through the federal government, which they're doing in these quote-unquote infrastructure bills. And then they have to try to convince the American people to wave their white flag and cry uncle and say, well, the prices are so high, maybe we should try this green energy stuff. The reason the prices are so high is because Biden is intentionally driving up prices. Instead of depending on domestic energy, natural resources that we are blessed to have here in Ohio, next door in Pennsylvania, next door in West Virginia, and in states throughout the country, instead he wants to rely on radical Islamic regimes, on the Russians, on the Venezuelans, and give up our sovereignty, give up our security, and drive up prices. And it's all about making money for his friends, his family, and his political donors so they can give that money back to his campaign. It's cynical and corrupt to the utmost.
It clearly does not make common sense. It clearly is a way to adversely affect capitalism. And when you say, well, why would they do such a thing? You just answered it, and you have a wonderful column at townhall.com on the topic. They're looking out for themselves, not the American people, pretty clearly.
Exactly. Let me tell you about a town called Cambridge, Ohio.
Yes.
Rural Guernsey County. It's about halfway between Columbus and the West Virginia-Pennsylvania border. They have population growth for the first time in 70 years, 7-0, because of the incredible growth in natural gas development here. In fact, if you took the state of Ohio, the state of Pennsylvania, and the state of West Virginia, and you combined our three states into a region, that region would be the third largest producer of natural gas in the entire world. In the world, Jeff. We are literally right here in Ohio sitting on a gold mine of natural gas and jobs. There's hundreds of thousands of jobs buried in the ground. And the question is, are we going to bring those jobs out of the ground and do it, obviously, in a way that's environmentally sound and protects the air we breathe and the water we drink? Or are we going to keep those jobs in the ground and empower the Russians and the Middle Eastern countries to create jobs for their people and drive up energy prices for our people? And here you have Biden choosing the latter. It is the antithesis to President Trump's America First agenda. You know, America First wasn't a slogan. It was a governing philosophy. It meant when it came to energy policy or trade policy or tax policy, putting the American people and the American worker first. And everything the Biden administration is doing is putting Americans behind foreigners, whether those are foreigners trying to sneak into our border, whether those are foreigners drilling for oil and gas in Russia and Venezuela and Saudi Arabia, or whether it's foreigners in places like China who are trying to eat our lunch economically. Biden puts the foreigners first. Trump put the Americans first.
Well, it's the difference between America first or America last, and I'm a big fan of helping your neighbor, but you have to help yourself. And as they say, when you're on the airplane, and I don't know if you travel with your children by air, but they always say, don't they, put your own mask on first, your air mask if there's a problem, then help the others, because you're no good to anybody unless you are strong. Well, it's the same thing with our nation, and if we want to be a player on the world stage, we've got to take care of home first.
Exactly. You got to take care of home first.
Josh Mandel is joining us. He is running for the U.S. Senate from the state of Ohio. You can find him online at joshmandel.com. He's on the Twitter machine at joshmandelohio. Excellent column he wrote at townhall.com that went up about 10 days ago about the Democrats driving up energy prices on purpose. It is so obvious when you then see the purported leader of the free world begging these other nations to loosen up the oil when we are shutting down pipelines and production. It is so patently obvious to the American people. Do the Democrats get it, or do they even care?
The Democrats get it, and they don't care.
Yeah.
I think the Democrats know exactly what they're doing. They understand what they're doing. They understand they're sticking it to the American people and the working class in places like Dayton, Ohio, and Youngstown, Ohio, and Akron, Ohio. And they don't care. They don't give a hoot. You know, my opponent in the general election next year is going to be a guy named Tim Ryan. This guy went to Washington to do good as a congressman and then stayed in Washington to do well for himself, his family, his lobbyist cronies. I mean, this guy used to call himself a centrist. Then he runs for president, and he comes out for the Green New Deal and defund the police and all this garbage. And these Democrats are crazy, man. They literally don't care about the people. And it's those of us who have advocated for and believe in the Trump America First agenda, we're the ones fighting for the people.
I had Congressman Ryan on my program here in Iowa when he ran for president, and here's what I can tell you. I don't know him as well as you do. He sounded like one guy on the first interview, and then after he'd been in the race for a little while, then all of a sudden he was a very different person. And so to your point, I don't know who you'll be running against next year once you win the primary, whether it's the guy who ran to begin with or the guy who adopted all of these leftist policies. Your race, by the way, there's a lot of people who want this job. How is it going? When I look at the news stories, they're already pulling out the long knives on you.
Oh, yeah. You know, I believe very strongly that we are honored by our friends but distinguished by our enemies. And I got to tell you, my enemies in this campaign are the Never Trumpers and the pro-impeachment group and the rhinos. And these Never Trumpers and pro-impeachment folks and the rhinos, they're coming at me with the long knives. They're coming at me with the sniper rifles. They're coming at me with the torches. I don't care, though. I'm not in politics to make friends. I'm not in politics to be liked. I'm doing this to stand up for the country. You know, I got three little ones at home. Gideon, who's 5 years old, Judah, who's 7 years old, and Rosie, who's 8 years old. I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it for the kids and grandkids of your listeners, and just to save the country. You know, I'm a Marine Corps vet. I did a couple tours in Iraq and Anbar province, and if these never-Trumpers and pro-impeachment rhinos think they're going to push me around, they got another thing coming.
Josh Mandel is running for the U.S. Senate from the state of Ohio. You can help him out by learning more, making donations, whatever it is, at joshmandel.com. He's on Twitter at joshmandelohio. All right, so as you evaluate things, lastly, with great appreciation for your time today, what is the greatest impact that you are going to be able to make as the next U.S. Senator from the state of Ohio?
Standing up for the Constitution and returning individual liberty and individual freedom to this country. You know, during this COVID, quote-unquote, pandemic, these big government politicians and bureaucrats, Democrat and Republican, have stolen so much power and control from we the people. And we need U.S. senators who are going to return that power and control to the citizens, whether it's moms and dads who want to have control over their kids' education, have control over whether their kids wear a mask, have control over whether their kids get a vaccine, or it's a small business owner like Schaefer Leather Goods here in Marietta, Ohio, who was forced to shut down while Walmart down the street could stay open and sell cowboy boots and work boots as a competitor. You know, we need U.S. senators who will stand up for the small business owners and moms and dads and citizens so we have the freedom and we have the liberty to control our lives and make decisions best for our family and our businesses and get these Faucis and mini Faucis and tyrannical governors out of the way.
Mr. Mandel, thank you so much for your service in one uniform and soon again in another. I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining Todd's show today.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one.
You do the same, sir. Josh Mandel, running for U.S. Senate from the state of Ohio. JoshMandel.com is the website. 844-747-8868 is the phone number. ToddStarnes.com is our website. Hope you give us a call. We'll engage with you after this break. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd, and this is the Todd Starnes Show.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
Studios and the Todd Starn Show. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today. He's making his way back from the campus of Liberty University, and he'll be back with you very soon. 844-747-8868 is the number. Jump on in. We've got some time yet this hour. 844-747-8868. Coming up in the next hour, attorney and news analyst Dr. Wendy Patrick will talk about vaccine rules and how they're not faring so well in court. Sorry, Biden administration. Then Sarah Westwood of the Washington Examiner joins us at the bottom of the next hour to talk about Democrats apparently don't have a problem losing and then running again. They just claim victory or think they should have won, and then that emboldens them. We'll talk about some examples. That's coming up in the next hour of this program. So as I look at the Twitter machine, and of course, that is where you find all your good information, right? Yeah, sure. Of course it is. I find it interesting that as you look at how states have been handling the COVID situation, there is absolutely no relationship to suggest that government policy that they keep doubling down on is appropriate, is the way it should be. There is nothing to justify it. States with high vaccination rates also have high number of cases. And it's not just density of population. We're talking about high number of cases per capita. So, again, if the idea is that those who are unvaccinated are the big threat, it's not borne out by fact. And I continue to be struck by the fact that we talk only about a vaccination and not about treatment. Now, again, I want to be super clear about this, Starnes Nation. I'm not anti-vax. It's a medical decision. It's not a governmental decision. You make the choice. But we ought to be able to follow two tracks simultaneously here. We ought to be able to not only have this vaccination, but all the vaccine, but also have treatments. We do it for everything else. Why is it there's such focus on one size fits all? You have to get the shot. No questions asked, no questions allowed. What about the treatments? Don't we need both? Again, we do with everything else. That's what makes me question motivations. And I think we have talked about it on this program before. If so, it bears repeating. If not, it's fresh to you. But we talk about this phrase, fully vaccinated, and I said this some time ago, and I hate to be right about it. But the concept here of fully vaccinated has meant, with the Moderna and Pfizer two shots, with Johnson & Johnson one. Now there's the big push by the government about boosters. At what point is the government going to change the definition of fully vaccinated? Fauci has hinted at it. Of course, anymore, he just says things. Doesn't matter if it's consistent or not. That's not important. At what point are you going to have people who dutifully thought, okay, I'll get the two-shot protocol. Now I'm fully vaccinated. Side effects weren't too bad. All right, it was a good thing to do. But maybe I don't want a booster. Maybe it's not that bad. Maybe I don't want an annual shot. At what point, and this has been the danger, friends, the danger of all of this is when you start ceding control to the government over aspects of your life, they're not satisfied with what you have given them, what you have allowed them to take from you. They want more. They always want more. So when you said, all right, I'll go along with the two-shot protocol, we'll call that fully vaccinated, I'll do it even though there's no legal mandate, I'll go along with it. What happens when you say, no, I'm going to raise my hand here. No, no, we're not going to do the third shot or the fourth shot or the tenth shot. They've set a precedent. The imposition into your life. And the problem is the precedent just continues to grow. Now, again, very, very clear here. Talk to a doctor. I'm not one. Make a medical decision. I don't know about your health. You don't know about mine. The government shouldn't know about either. You can be pro-vaccine and anti-mandate, anti-government power grab. Fundamental to everything we talk about is the fact that government only has the power we the people allow it to have. Not the other way around. It's not the government's money, it's our money that we allow them to take from us. And we have the power. Never, never forget that. Never go away from this program. We're back after a break. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today. Thanks so much for being along. Hour two in the books, hour three coming up of the Todd Starn Show.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us, that's right, I love this American ride.
Wherever you're listening across this, the greatest nation God ever blessed, welcome to hour number three of a Wednesday edition of the Todd Starnes Show. Coast to coast on more than 100 outstanding radio stations and streaming online at toddstarnes.com. Hello, fellow patriots. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today from the Liberty University studios within my home base, News Talk 1540 KXEL in Waterloo and Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We'll tell you how you can connect with the show more in just a moment, but let's get right to it and go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. We're a return guest to the program. Attorney and news analyst Dr. Wendy Patrick is standing by. Dr. Patrick, thank you for taking the time. How are you?
You bet, Jeff. I wouldn't miss a chance to join you.
You're very kind. We see you on Newsmax, One America News, News Nation, Court TV, talking about all manner of legal issues. And near as I can tell, the Biden administration is batting 1,000 on vaccine mandates, 1,000 losses, if you will, 1,000 percentage. What's the status of some of these things?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because the status changes by the day. I mean, you have mandates that go into effect and then somebody brings a lawsuit, an injunction is granted, which means it's temporarily suspended as the merits get worked out, you know, ideally. But then sometimes you have appeals from the injunctions and then they go back into effect. One thing's for sure, if we're going to have an extension of a mandate every time there's a new variant, we are in it for the long haul because there is no indication we'll all of a sudden stop seeing variants. I mean, that's what viruses do. They mutate. Most doctors will agree on that. So this latest mandate by the president goes through mid-March, and it's based on the Omicron variant, not because it's any more deadly, not because it lands more people in the hospital. I mean, we already know variants are transmissible, and that really strikes, you know, fear and disappointment into people that were just now hoping that 2022 would be more of a maskless existence. Doesn't seem to be going that direction.
They seem to be trying about anything. Let's do a vaccine mandate. Let's do a mask mandate. Let's make sure everybody's got their little cards. But again, when these are challenged in court, when people do push back, these are not just token lawsuits. You have judges sitting there who are saying, you know, we're going to block the implementation of these mandates till we really get a look at it. That's not dispositive of the full legal issue, but it certainly gives you a little hint about it.
That's exactly right, Jeff. And I would expect no less. You have a great legal mind. That's exactly right. We call that forecasting, you and I and our colleagues, meaning if a judge blocks it to begin with, you might imagine, well, they might believe that there's some merit to the arguments. And in fact, we do see many of these arguments have merit. And, you know, this is especially true in jurisdictions that don't have the community health issues that maybe other jurisdictions do. I mean, it's hard to argue if you have, you know, an intentional, immense spreading going on somewhere. Maybe people aren't wearing masks. They should. There's a lot of ICU bed need, you know, that type of thing. But, you know, we're talking, there's many jurisdictions that just don't have that much of a problem to justify the extent of the restrictions. But it almost doesn't matter where, because the constitutional issues are the same. The Constitution is all 50 states has to comply. And that is the basis for many of these lawsuits that are arguing there may be plenty of ways to protect the community, but infringing on constitutional rights is not one of them. That's the argument. So, of course, the other side would say, oh, but health. Well, if it was Ebola, you know, there has to be a balance of the equities that makes sense within the science that we know exists. You know, they keep saying follow the science. Well, some of the courts are doing exactly that, and that's why you do see some of these lawsuits being successful if they don't justify the extent of the restrictions. And, Jeff, we just can't say, well, look, they're doing it in other countries, because our Constitution is unlike other countries. So if something flies there, does not in any way, shape, or form mean it would be legally justified here. You need more.
In our remaining 60 seconds with Dr. Wendy Patrick, you're supposed to show a vaccination card various places. It's a CDC-issued document, in essence. We now see some NFL players with fake vaccination cards. Is this now becoming a bit of a cottage industry?
Well, you and I both predicted from the beginning it would become a cottage industry. It only comes to light when you have famous people involved. And I'll just wrap it up by saying, if they caught these three because they're high-profile NFL players, how many more have they not caught that are being uploaded every day?
Dr. Patrick, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Dr. Wendy Patrick, she is online at wendypatrickphd.com and on the Twitter machine at wendypatrickphd. That's where you can see the link to some of her television appearances that we mentioned, but also her most recent column for psychologytoday.com. And she joined us live on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line here on the Todd Starn Show. Again, how can you connect with this program? So many different ways. How about toddstarns.com? You can also follow Todd on Twitter and Getter and Parler at Todd Starns. You can follow me at Twitter and Getter and Parler at Iowa Politics, IOWA Politics, and my website is totallyiowa.com. That's where you see links for the three different podcasts that I have up there every day on a variety of different topics. 844-747-8868 is the number, and please join this conversation. We have time for you now until the bottom of the hour. Alan from Maine, you called in at the end of the last hour, and I didn't see it in time. I apologize. If you want to give a call back, love to put you to the head of the line at 844-747-8868. The thing about these mandates that are being challenged in court, and this is what she was talking about, I just want to elaborate a little bit on it, again, as an attorney, as Dr. Patrick is an attorney. The rules that infringe upon a citizen's liberties have to be narrowly constructed, the least restrictive alternative. So, in other words, you only have restrictions that are as restrictive as absolutely necessary to handle whatever the issue is. So if the issue is COVID, are there ways to get to the ultimate goal of controlling, if you will, the disease? Are there other ways of doing it that are less restrictive than a mask mandate, a vaccination mandate, anything that's a big mandate? And if there are less restrictive alternatives available, those must be used. And so what you see the government attorneys doing, the Biden administration puts a mandate in place. There's a lawsuit challenging the propriety of it. The government has to come in and give at least enough to a judge to say, okay, you can keep your mandate in place while we examine the full lawsuit. But they're not even able to do that. That's the telling part. And it's judges all around the country. So you can't say that it's what we used to call forum shopping. In other words, you go to this judge or this court or this jurisdiction because you believe they are more sympathetic with your views. You think you're going to get a better result. No, this is now too widespread to be anything like that. So what these government attorneys are being asked by a judge, all right, give me some evidence, give me something to go on to justify letting this be in place while we litigate the full issues. They cannot even do that. They cannot show the harm. They cannot show at a very limited level how the mandate, the regulation, the rule is directly connected and therefore necessary. They can't show it. And that's why the courts say, well, then we're not going to allow you to put this in effect. Now, that's a temporary ruling. That's what they say. Here's an injunction against implementation of this executive order, mandate, rule, law, whatever it might happen to be. The idea of these injunctions to prohibit enforcement of the new provision, those are in place because of the great harm that could result if an improper regulation is put in place. That's why the judge issues a temporary order stopping implementation of the rule or the law until there's a fuller hearing. Now, the judge might be satisfied at that later point and says, yep, the regulation's just fine. But this is the part that, again, as a lawyer, strikes me. Different judges, different parts of the country, different topics for mandates. Every single one of them is put on the shelf with a temporary restraining order, a temporary injunction that says, no, you can't put this in place. There's not normally that unanimity of thought among judges because each of these cases is factually distinct. Each of these judges has different interpretations of things. You'd like to think that every decision of a judge would be the same as every other decision, but they're not. There are nuances. But it's just striking how all you have to do, quote unquote, all you have to do, is challenge it. And courts have been, so far, 100% to my mind, going right along with stopping these mandates, stopping these rules. Now, we talked some months ago on this Todd Starnes radio program about my suspicion that Joe Biden said, all right, if you have a business of more than 100 employees, then you're going to have a vaccination mandate and OSHA's going to enforce it. Well, a lot of businesses just went along because they thought, oh, well, it's going to come anyway. I don't think they ever intended for OSHA to put it in place because they thought they could bamboozle people enough. They could fool them enough into just compliance. The obedient compliance. Well, then when people said, nah, I'm not really sure about this, then OSHA tried to put it in place. They were forced to. And then what happened? Swatted right back. OSHA rescinds it. Biden administration still pushes it. That part, the White House part of the Biden administration pushes it. Really telling to me about, A, the government overreach that thankfully is being limited by courts, but B, what are the intentions to keep pushing and pushing and pushing this one thing? And again, it has nothing to do with medical treatment. It has nothing to do with science. It has to do with control. And if they get you on this, they'll expand it to control you in other ways. If you think I'm wrong, I'd love to be wrong, because that's rather scary, quite honestly, that the people running the show now have that mindset. 844-747-8868 is how you can join this conversation. Sarah Westwood of the Washington Examiner after the bottom of the hour. Your calls coming up next. Dennis, hold on from New York. I'll get to you after this short break. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
From the front lines of the culture war, it's Todd Starnes.
Studios. This is the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in. I got about 4 minutes and two callers. Let's see how we can do this. Dennis, you're calling from New York. You're listening at ToddStarns.com. Thanks for the call, Dennis. What's on your mind?
Oh, that's about the mandates and the judges blocking it. Do they know information is being censored? They're getting all the information and adverse reactions because they're filtering out all the negative reactions. People are actually getting sick and even in some cases dying. And the judges and the public getting this information out, the mainstream media is censoring all that.
Well, I can tell you that from my experience as a lawyer, what the judges are looking at is, can the government justify the regulation? In other words, is there such a serious health crisis that the only alternative is a mandate? And that has that is a fundamental point. And in one respect, it does not matter about the impact that would come up at the trial. So what I'm pointing out is that at this level, the government can't even make the prima facie basic case to justify a mandate. And everything you just mentioned, Dennis, and thanks so much for the call from New York, you just made the case when it actually goes to a full-blown hearing about how this is hazardous. Also calling in, listening at ToddStarns.com. Kevin is calling in, we're told, from Canada. Kevin, Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. Thanks for taking time. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Jeff. Yeah, I'm calling from Canada, and I'm getting ready to lose my job because the United States is making it mandatory for Canadians to be vaccinated coming into the U.S., and I'm told that Canada's responding likewise, making all U.S. citizens coming into Canada to be vaccinated. So I'm going to have to make that choice, and it's not going to matter what happens in the courts because this is Canada stopping me from coming into their country to do my job making deliveries.
Now, this is one of the really difficult things, and this is a very important point. So for your job, you've got to go back and forth across the border into two different countries, and the different rules that they have in place, that's going to make it impossible for you to do your job unless you are coerced into doing something that I take it you don't want to do.
Correct. Yeah, and there's a lot of coercion. A lot of people are trying to get me to do it, you know, especially family because of the money issue and, you know, friends and stuff. And our company is going to hurt from this, too, because they're short on drivers as it is. So it's hurting them as well.
So does it get to a tipping point for you, Kevin, where you say, okay, I don't want to get the jab, but I have to and risk it because of the need for a job, my family, et cetera? I mean, that's a tough one.
No. It is, but yeah, I'm looking at the disruption that it's going to cost, losing my seniority, going to a new company, losing my vacation time and all that. That's the main thing. I think until January 14th before it's that make it mandatory. So I got time to do something.
Well, yeah, you got 4 or 5 weeks to figure it all out. But obviously the companies are up against it themselves. Thank you so much, Kevin. Have a blessed Christmas. And I did not mention that to Dennis, who called in from New York. Merry Christmas to you as well. It is not too soon to say Merry Christmas, friends. Not in any way, shape, manner, or form. A couple of very interesting calls there, and I'm so appreciative that you folks called in, 844-747-8868. So, again, Dennis is talking about a legal situation and these lawsuits, and we're not to the point of evidence that's presented, an evidentiary hearing. So when he's talking about all the side effects and the adverse reactions to the medication, to the vaccination, we have not gotten to that point. And that's what I think is really striking about all of these court rulings so far. Because on the face of it, these judges say, I just don't see, just because you say you're the Biden administration, why this ought to be legal. And they're not even able to present the very basic case. And just now, I really feel for Kevin. Oh, my goodness. You got to make the choice. Do I give up what I have earned because they're not going to give me, for example, a religious exemption? I mean, it's one thing on paper, friends, to say, well, we have these exemptions. You know, if you have a health exemption, maybe you are a woman with child and you don't want to jeopardize that. You're not sure about the science. maybe for very valid faith-based reasons, you say, no, I don't want the vaccination. They're rarely in some of these places, if at all, granting those exemptions. So the key is not just, is there an exemption? It's whether or not they're fairly examining the requests. It's just so insidious. Sarah Westwood of the Washington Examiner talks about retreading Democrats, literally. That's coming up. Jeff Stein in for Todd. This is the Todd Starnes Show. University Studio. This is the Todd Starnes Show. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today. Gene, hold on the phone line. I'd like to hear from you about some of these COVID issues, but right now we're going to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Return guest to the program. She is Sarah Westwood. She is a politics and investigative reporter for the Washington Examiner on the Twitter machine at Sarah C. Westwood. Sarah, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So I have seen this here in my state of Iowa, where in particular Democrats can run, lose, and then in essence are not deterred because they had a plan. Well, I'll serve in this capacity, then I'll run for this higher office. They don't care if the voters have said no. They're running again for an even higher office. And you're seeing that, it's certainly not just in my state, you're seeing some real high-profile folks who certainly believe if at first you don't succeed, run again.
And that's right. I mean, the latest to sort of follow this pattern was Stacey Abrams, who lost the governor's race in Georgia in 2018 to Governor Brian Kemp, and is now throwing her hat in the ring again in a cycle that's going to be much more unfriendly to Democrats than the last time that she lost. And that's also the case with Beto O'Rourke, who is challenging Texas Governor Greg Abbott after failing a statewide bid and spectacularly in the presidential race that he ran. But this is not a new theme, especially over the past few years during the Trump era, when the focus on Democratic candidates taking on unpopular Republicans was really nationalized, and a lot of these Democratic candidates became sort of folk heroes on the left. They built enormous star power, enormous name recognition, massive fundraising operations. And so that's a valuable thing in campaigns, and you're seeing them try to reprise that again in some instances, even though voters rejected them already.
And again, the O'Rourke example is such a good one because he was a member of Congress, tried to be a senator, was rejected, and acted as if he had won by saying, all right, now I'm running for president, with, as you note, spectacularly poor results, you know, dropping out right before a rally in Iowa. He was on the ground in Iowa and then dropped out. Is there a sense that the name recognition might help some of these people in their home states, or is it really a matter of they don't have credibility in fundraising unless they actually get back into the arena as opposed to just fundraising and speaking?
Well, absolutely, the name recognition is a huge factor. It's why a failed gubernatorial candidate in a red state where a Democrat was not expected to prevail was able to have this sort of recognizable celebrity that allowed him to jump into the presidential race. How many failed gubernatorial candidates in non-swing states can you really name? So for him to have pulled that off, it speaks to the way that the left sort of lionized him when he was running in Texas, and the amount of money he was able to raise from outsiders in that race, I think, gave him this false sense that he could maybe be a real contender in the presidential race. And especially for candidates like Beto, like Stacey Abrams, who have ambitions clearly for higher office, they will sort of fade from relevancy the longer, the more time that passes since their last bid. Georgia's becoming a little bit more of a swing state, so Stacey Abrams potentially is better positioned to be successful than Beto O'Rourke, who has already been rejected several times. But still, this is going to be a brutal cycle by all indications for Democrats. And so candidates that failed when things are better for their party, not necessarily going to do great when things are far worse.
Sarah Westwood of the Washington Examiner joining us on the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. How do Democrats, for example, in Georgia, feel about the fact that it's Stacey Abrams, in essence, I guess, taking all of the air out of the room? Are there any Democrats who are saying, well, you had your shot, now it's a step aside? Or is this going to be a cakewalk for her there? In terms of the nomination, I mean.
In terms of the nomination, I think it's absolutely going to be a cakewalk for her. In terms of the star power that Georgia Democrats have, she is really probably one of their best recruits that they could get. But again, this landscape is likely going to be tilted against Democrats. Stacey Abrams has high name ID, but she also has a lot of negative traits associated with that name ID because she's so recognizable. People already have a sense that she was sort of refused to accept the results of the 2018 election, which could be a huge liability when Democrats are trying to make the case that Republicans are the ones rejecting democracy here. She could also benefit from the fact that Georgia Republicans, though, are expected to have a potentially really competitive primary with former Senator David Perdue jumping in to challenge Governor Brian Kemp from the right. That could really bruise whoever emerges from that fight for the general election contest with Stacey Abrams. So potentially she's sensing an opening there, and that could be a really interesting race to watch.
And I don't mean to suggest by the premise that I used at the beginning of this conversation to say you only get one chance, and if you lose an election, you're forever done for. But on some of these, it just seemed like they had a script or they had a path, and they weren't going to let a little thing like a rejection from voters get in the way of their ultimate goal. I have to think voters might get a little turned off by that, depending on the specific situation.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like you mentioned, Beto O'Rourke sort of running for president despite having lost that statewide race and despite all the money and fanfare that was behind him in that bid, I think sort of speaks to the fact that these Democratic politicians are running not necessarily for the job they say they want, but for something even higher. But you're right that this is not always a fool's errand, running again in the same state where you've lost. I think Senator John Ossoff is a great example of that. When there was a special election to fill Tom Price's seat at the beginning of the Trump presidency, that race attracted millions of dollars, a special election for Georgia 6. In fact, I believe it broke fundraising records for a congressional seat at that time. Millions of dollars poured in from liberal groups, from Democrats all over the country who were sort of hoping that John Ossoff could hand some sort of rebuke to Trump-aligned Republicans in that race, and he still lost. He went on to launch a statewide bid for Georgia Senate and won because of a lot of circumstances that I'm sure have been rehashed many times after the 2020 election. So it's not always guaranteed to be a failure, but the pattern seems to suggest that once voters reject you, even if you have a lot of high name recognition, it's difficult to overcome that.
In our remaining minute or so with Sarah Westwood of the Washington Examiner, you posted a story today about, and we've been talking about vaccine mandates. It seems to be just what you talk about these days. There's a distinction potentially between a mandate for the private sector like in New York as opposed to some of these national mandates. Make that point, if you would, please, because I thought it was really important.
Let's try to talk to a legal expert about this for this story. And what the Biden administration is sort of getting slapped on the wrist for from court when it comes to their private sector vaccine mandate is that OSHA, the Department of Labor, doesn't really have the authority to impose public health policy because a lot of public health authority is delegated to states and municipalities. That's where vaccine mandates previously have been enforced. There's never been one on the federal level. So some legal experts think that Bill de Blasio's private sector vaccine mandate could be upheld simply because it's the proper channel for exercising that authority, whereas the federal government, and in particular the Department of Labor, which is not public health focused at all, is the wrong place to try to enforce those sorts of rules.
Sarah Westwood, thanks so much for the time. I always appreciate the intelligent conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Westwood reports on politics and does investigations for the Washington Examiner, washingtonexaminer.com. She is on the Twitter machine at Sarah C. Westwood. 844-747-8868 is how you can reach the Todd Starnes program. I'm hoping Gene from North Carolina held on. If so, I'd love to talk about this issue of treatment for COVID. Gene, if you're there, thanks for being along.
Yes. Hello, Jeff.
You were mentioning
why don't they talk about treatments and prevention? Because the doctors that know about it have been censored.
You're right. You're right. But so, but what's the broader reason? Why do you think that the government doesn't want, and big medical institutions, by the way, why they don't want doctors talking about this stuff? What's their game?
I think it's because they make a lot of money from the vaccines, and the treatments like IV vitamin C are very inexpensive. And even these other drugs that they're using, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, apparently not that expensive, and they are helping people.
Yes. Wait a minute. So they're not expensive. They help people. Yeah, that really does work against Big Pharma, doesn't it? And I'm being sarcastic, but clearly it's that easy to see, isn't it?
Yes, and there's a doctor in South Carolina, Dr. Chang. He went over to China when the pandemic started, and he treated several people in the hospital with IV vitamin C, and not one of them died.
Oh, goodness. I tell you. Gene, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention and calling in from North Carolina to the Todd Starnes Show. You have a very Merry Christmas now. I tell you, now, this is the thing, and I'll give you a quick example before we go to break. Where I live, we have a couple of major health care systems, right? You've got, you know, in essence, McDonald's over here and Burger King over here. That's not their real names. You get the idea. Their physicians are very good about being consistent with the overall word coming from that medical institution. All right. Yet when I have doctors on my program here that are not tied to those medical institutions, I get very different counsel with regard to the vaccination, with regard to treatments, etc. I just come back to the point of A, it's a medical decision. So, B, get a second opinion. And C, just as Gene, who listens to the Todd Starnes Show on WSIC in North Carolina, just as she pointed out, there are treatments, but they don't necessarily want you to know about it. And why is that? Well, quite obviously, somebody's got an interest financially in vaccinations. People at the pharmaceutical companies must have boat payments that they need to make or something. And so they want you to get the jab. I don't think it has to be either or. Why can't we talk about treatment while we also talk about accurate data on vaccinations? Folks, if we get to the point where your medical decision-making is hampered, either because opportunities are not known to you, information is withheld from you, in the United States of America, we have fallen quite, quite far. If I can't trust medical decisions because of these outside forces, that's a scary day. That's a scary day. And we simply need to ask the questions we have. Same thing with any political issue. You have a question? Ask it. Those politicians work for you, not the other way around. 844-747-8868. Final segment coming up, including time to talk to you. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd on a Wednesday edition of the Todd Starnes Show.
It's Radio Free America. Todd Starnes.
University Studio. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Program. ToddStarnes.com is the website. Twitter, Getter, Parler, at Todd Starnes. I'm Jeff Stein from News Talk 1540 KXEL in Iowa, filling in for Todd today. And you can find me on the Twitter machine at Iowa Politics. Twitter, Getter, and Parler for me at Iowa Politics. Also, totallyiowa.com is the website, and that's where you can get links to my podcasts of various things. I always look forward to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the reason is 2 o'clock Central Time here in God's country. 3 o'clock out east. The rest of you do your own math. Because that's when I get the Todd Starnes email of the day. His excellent staff there at the Mighty 990 in Memphis, they put together all manner of stories on the website. And it's a great reminder because I might get caught up in what I'm doing during the day. But then shortly after this program ends, there's an email. And all I have to do then is scroll down and click on the various links. So if I forget to go to the website, that's a great reminder. And you can subscribe to the newsletter. It's totally free. Go to toddstarnes.com and say, yes, please. I'd like to have the Todd Starnes newsletter in my email inbox. And it comes up, as I said, right after this program. 844-747-8868 is the phone number. And I want to tell you, you know, Todd has built such a wonderful group of you listeners out there who are so loyal and so wonderful when you call in or when you send me a note separately, and you're very gracious, and you have so many options where you can get information and to choose this program and to stay with this program when a guest host is on. That is especially gratifying. And he's built a great group of people to work with down there at KWAM Radio in Memphis. And so my thanks for their consistent professionalism and helping make this all very easy for me on this end. We've got a couple of minutes left, and I don't know, because of the nature of things, if I get the chance to talk to you again before Christmas. So let me tell you that I wish each and every one of you the blessings of the season. The true spirit of Christmas. Yes, we now in this country worry about decorating with red and green lights. Yes, we worry about holiday parties and buying gifts and consumerism and all of that. That is an aspect of a holiday, a day off from work called Christmas. Could in essence be called anything. The Santa Claus and Christmas tree part of it. But you, listening to this program, know the true meaning and spirit of Christmas. And we can get distracted from that with all the rest of this and all the hassle and all the noise, all the consumerism. Whatever you do, don't forget the reason, as they say, the reason for the season. I know for... I would say every one of you listening, I don't have to give you this reminder, but it is that sense that I think helps us get through all the other. In other words, if you have a true foundation and understanding for the season, then all of the rest of the stuff about shopping and parties and whatever, you can deal with it. You can dismiss it. Because of the inner knowledge of what's really important. And that is faith. And that is family. And that is friends. And so I wish each and every one of you the blessings of Christmas. A very Merry Christmas. I am not afraid to say it in those words. And if we do talk again later this month and I get to wish you it again, well, even the more the better for me. If you need a perfect stocking stuffer, Todd Starnes has all sorts of good stuff, including books. Our Daily Biscuit, hello, that'll fit into anybody's stocking. And you can find that all at toddstarnes.com, and I have things at totallyiowa.com. Kyle, Grace, thank you so much for your excellent work, as always, plus other folks behind the scenes. Mr. Starnes, it is always a privilege. I never take it lightly, and I thank you for trusting me to drive the car today. And to all of you, thank you for being along. I'm Jeff Stein. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.